Welcome to the Self-Helpful Podcast. I'm Kevin Miller, and this is the podcast people tune into for in-depth discussions on the latest research from our foremost leaders in self-improvement, so you can be growing and more equipped to live at your fullest capacity in body, mind, and soul. Our bodies are like a wood-burning stove to a degree. You can throw anything in them, and they'll burn it for energy and keep your heart beating. So putting in 10 Twinkies or a salad, I mean, what's the difference? Well, most of our culture's focus is just on weight gain or loss. So the idea is salad has less calories and Twinkies will make you fat. But let's put weight on the back burner and just focus on overall wellness and ability. Let's make brain function, energy, resilience, and longevity our focal point. How do we eat for those goals? How do you eat so you feel more hopeful and joyful? How does food factor into mental health and depression? Food is far more than just fuel to burn. The nutritional value in the food is either burning and building us or burning and depleting us. It's our most powerful medicine or poison. This is my Functional Friday episode where we focus on our health and wellness so we have the physical and mental capacity to help ourselves and others. My co-host is Randy James, medical doctor and functional medicine expert. We spend the bulk of this episode discussing the psychology and concept of what and how we eat. Then around the 60-minute mark, we talk about the literal foods that we eat and what we advocate. If you find value from this self-helpful podcast, it'd be great if you would leave a rating or review. Best thing you can do, keep the discussion going. Talk about what you heard here with someone else. You can always find me, connect with me at my website or social media at kevinmiller.co. Next up, Dr. Randy James and I talk about food. What foods are going to help us and hurt us the most? I'm a foodie and I enjoy learning about the process that brings great foods and beverages from idea to the table. And then I like tasting them and learning the nuances of what creates the most significant tastes from coffee to cheese to distilled beverages. I did a tequila tasting in Mexico and recently bourbon, Heaven Hill Bottled in Bond Bourbon, really impressed me from the story to the taste. I grew up in Kentucky where horse racing and bourbon are famous and I got introduced to Heaven Hill Bottled in Bond Bourbon. It's produced by Heaven Hill Distillery, which has been and still remains family-owned since 1935. And I'm impressed with the bourbon's ultra-rich, smooth taste. And right on the bottle, it states that this bourbon is 7 years old, which is actually three times longer than what's required to be certified as bottled in bond. I feel with beverages, the longer the prep, the better the taste. Being a bottled in bond product means it must pass a list of 7 requirements that set the standard for this quality bourbon. So look for it at your local store. Heaven Hill reminds you to think wisely and drink wisely.
We talked about the reality that in today's culture, we can go through our day, our week, our existence without any physical effort. You know, no muscle resistance, no elevation of our heart rate or whatever. So we have to kind of artificially do that. And today with, I mean, it's been that way for a long time. My gosh, since processed food, we can exist off of food that's totally dead, has no nutritional value, no life-giving quantity, but we can live off of it. And it's the main portion of our grocery stores. It's the, what do they say? All the good stuff's on the outside.
Right. It's the big middle.
The big middle. Yes. Yeah, so you got, what do you got on the outside? You know, produce and meats and milks and cheese and fish and whatever, veggies. And then in the inside is all that stuff that we can exist on. I mean, you can eat that for many years and exist.
Stay alive. Yeah.
Yeah. But is it the food that's going to make you as fully functioning as possible? We should use the word optimal even. I mean, if you want to perform better and have, and not, you know, as we talk about and have longevity quality. Right. And that's what gets me too. Cause we've always got somebody says, yeah, you know, grandpa ate leather and nails and he survived. I mean, the body's amazing at survival. How much better could he have been? How many things could he have elevated in his physical body, his consciousness, his soul?
Right. And the problem there is you'll never know.
Yeah.
And so people hearing this will think, well, yeah, of course I could do something a little bit better. From the medical side, I think this is the coming together of health span and lifespan. So mm-hmm. grandpa lived 90, whatever years old, but how many of those years was he healthy? Mm-hmm. Whatever that means. You said the word optimal. I always chafe at the word optimal because it's undefinable, right? So we just have to put that into the equation that...
That's just your own guilt. I am optimal and you're not.
Well, yeah, you might be right.
Thank you.
Well, and the other chafing I have is actually in my own colleagues, my own profession, the websites that promote optimum wellness, right? And then you see a picture of young, athletic, well-built, skinny, whatever, and it's just like, oh, gosh.
I do want to caveat that real quick because you're an MD, and when you talk about your peers in that regard, you're not talking about other... medical doctors and traditional medicine. You're talking about the
other functional wellness. Docs in the wellness industry.
Yes. Okay.
That actually makes a case that I, as a doc, would know what's optimal for Kevin Miller, what your optimal blood pressure, cholesterol, vitamin K, whatever would be for you to do really well on being a husband and a father and a mountain bike rider. Yeah. That's just not possible. So let's not hold that out there as some kind of holy grail that people could get to.
Well, let's go back to what we've been talking about lately, the sensitivity. I want like the sensitivity of a high performing car. We referenced, yeah. I think in the last show, we referenced that Ford versus Ferrari.
Yeah.
I'm not a great car guy, but I grew up with that and how they're tinkering with the smallest thing so they can get this car to drive the fastest it can for 24 hours straight in Le Mans. So it's just got to be perfect. So they're doing everything perfect down to the minutia of the fuel and the ratio of this and that. So we are a culture in America, well, worldwide, where we love sports and we're watching the next MMA fight or the football or the tennis. And man, those guys, I mean, the night before his Wimbledon tennis match, Roger
Federer,
I mean, is he having beer and pizza? I mean, we would all laugh at that. He's going to have perfect food. He's going to try to get perfect sleep. He's going to do all kinds of things to come out and be at his tip top. And then, so in this show, I want to suppose that everybody listening wants to be as well as they can. If you don't, then why are you listening to the show?
Right.
So assuming that everybody wants to, like you and I do, because I want to, you're going to talk to patients and they're going to be asking you critical questions about their life. And are you fuzzy brain today because you ate crap and then slept bad and you're trying to do a new business model. Right. I'm writing a book. I mean, I want to do great things. I want to be happy for my family tonight after a long day of work. And those things all reside on what we're talking about here. So assuming again that everybody wants to be as optimal as they can.
Right.
Okay. So food, and I want to get literal. So, my notes on this were thinking about what are life-giving foods, what foods are neutral, if there is such a thing, and what are actually life-taking. And folks, I do want you to hear. I mean, I want you to come out with some thoughts on literally what might you best eat for breakfast, for lunch, for whatever. Before we get into, and I literally thought, let's start with breakfast. Real quick, Randy, hit on the methodology of whatever it is you are eating. So we're going to get to what are you eating, the literal food, but methodology-wise, because right now, and we talked about on the show, the hot buttons are things like intermittent fasting, keto, the idea
Whole
of having
30.
Yeah. The lot of meals, eat six meals a day.
That's kind of on the other side of, and people will now say, you got to fuel, you got to prime the pump. That's MetaFast. I mean, some of the other,
hey, so if you go
the ones that you get did, I forgot their name, but they had you eating all day long.
A lot. Yeah. 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 So, and there you go. So you talked about your peers right now. If you go to the biggest fitness instructors, like, what's the girl's name? Jillian
Michaels
and, and name 10 others, name 10 of her peers. You're going to hear one go, oh, keto. Mm-hmm. And the other one's going to go intermittent fasting. Mm-hmm. And the other one's going to be touting essential oils and nutritional supplements and, whatever. And then the other's going to say six meals a day. And the other's going to say high protein to build muscle. And it's frustrating.
Very. And I think that's a good place to start off with too, because even as we dance in this frustrating and incomplete area where we do use words like optimal, but I would say, well, we shouldn't. Let's just start off at the beginning and say, we have to say words.
Yeah.
Okay. But nutrition science is barely science. Okay, so nutrition science is so hard to do because nobody just eats. Nobody just fuels. You eat with either joy or you eat in the car, you eat mad, and there's an emotional connection. And like this morning, when you asked me, well, why do you eat what you eat? The first thought I had is, well, I'm eating a lot around my kids. That's the first thought I had. Not like if it was just me and Marcy, I think our diets would be so different.
Yeah.
So at the outset, and people talk about, well, you know, a keto-based or a Mediterranean-based or a whatever-based, and let's just start off and say nobody knows, right? There is no way to know the best diet for Kevin Miller. So if you came in and said, I want to know the best, I'd say, I'm not your guy. Nobody's your guy. You cannot know. In the same way that as you write a book, you cannot know exactly the right word to say for it to sell a million copies. You cannot know.
Well,
but you make your best attempt.
Yeah, you know-ish.
For every person that walks... squishy science.
So you can't claim to say you're going to figure out. I mean, if you made it your work for the next week to figure and do all the tests you could on me, to just dive into me personally, you could come up with, to the best you can, a pretty optimal diet.
Yes, but let's go back to Ford versus Ferrari. Those guys spent, it was in the movie, like $9 million car.
Yeah.
Okay, so they got data points every single day. They tried this fuel, that fuel, this fuel, that fuel. If we could do that for Kevin Miller, like for a Roger Federer who has his own chef, his own whatever, then you can. It's calculus. You can dial it in more exactly for sure.
And that's our journey. I mean, literally, you and me. And
my family.
But you and I have been working together for whatever, 6 years now. And how many different things do we continually try to ultimately figure out, oh man, I don't do as well. No matter what the test is, I just realize that food, when I eat that, I feel this way or I sleep this way or whatever. When I eat that one, I tend to have, or eat this, man, I got more energy on my ride or whatever. So it is trial and error aside from, you know, what tests we can do to figure out.
That's right. And now we're back to, I said data points, and I think we would also say awareness.
Yeah.
If you have a watch, you're going to get all day long data points that somebody else might not get. And then you can, so now we're speaking to people all over the map. For a long time, you know, I wasn't a watch guy because I just didn't want to deal with data points. It didn't matter. But now for whatever reason, I'm more interested So for people out there, I don't want people to think, oh yeah, you got to get a watch or a test or try this food, that food, this food, that food. But if you are listening to this and you want to be becoming better, then I would say then you need some awareness, some data points. You must, and that's why we're having the show, is to define our terms. You can't know optimal, but you can approach it, right? Like you can't be perfect, but you could be approaching it. You can be going in that direction for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I do, before we get into the literal foods and speaking the words of a food, you know, intermittent fasting, keto, many things. I mean, because we hear so many people tout those. So I'll just give my personal thought on it. I've done them all. And I would say I do them all. And it's cyclical. You're the one that brought that to my thought process a long time ago, back when we first met, about the idea. You kind of said, you know, think about it way back when. You grew this and then it went out of season and you didn't eat it anymore. And you did this. So you were naturally
forced
to eat cyclically.
Yes.
And so we did that for the most span of time since the Industrial Revolution, which is, when was that? Well, late 1800s, early 1900s?
Yeah, it began to change with Industrial Revolution, 1700s in Britain, and let's say late 1800s in America.
Not that they were eating perfect back then. I mean, we have cultures back then that realized, yeah, like the early, you know, English, and figured out they could make pastries and they just ate grains and meat for every meal. No vegetables. And they were getting scurvy and things like that. So it's not that they were doing it perfectly. But anyways, back to cycles. So, I mean, you do fasting a lot. And, you know, and people know, most everybody now has heard intermittent fasting. And so we're prone to find something and go, man, I kind of feel good, and adopt it. And that's what I'm going to do for life. I'm not any, at this point, I'm not. I do that for a while, and then I may do keto for a while, and then I'll do, let's eat a lot of, I've been doing a ton of fruit lately. I don't know why. And I was doing, the 6 meals a day. Now I'm doing 2 at the most. And I call it schizophrenic, but it's cyclical. And I'm also kind of listening to my body. I don't feel like eating breakfast lately. But I'm just not.
So we're into the squishy place again, because Kevin Miller can't know, was 6 meals a day better for you or 2 meals a day better for you? Because your ride is the same, essentially. Mm-hmm. When you get into the performance, how much has to do with what you ate last night versus how much have you trained over the last 3 months?
I I've done it enough and tested enough, feel like my rides, I feel more energetic, stronger if I have had some carbs the day before, as opposed to the keto. But again, there's athletes out there winning the Olympics on a keto diet. So I don't know. But for me, I've just done it enough. I've noticed, I just feel a little better if I've had some carbs the day before.
Yeah. So we're back to everybody's different. There is not going to be a single diet that we could ever say, this is the one. And hopefully, I'm imagining, so a lot of patients will come in and just feel relaxed, like, okay, whew. So I don't have to do that keto thing, that Mediterranean thing, that vegetarian thing, or that fasting thing. But then you do have to eat. So,
and you probably had patients who said, I tried keto and oh my gosh, I feel so much better. I lost weight. And then you've had others that say, I tried it, felt like crap. I gained weight.
Yeah. And they feel better with carbs.
Yeah. Which is, the difference.
And of course, it's what kind of carbs? When do you eat your carbs? So carbs doesn't mean Twinkies. Obviously, and we can get into that.
And we just hit on, genetics. If you were, I'm going to be facetious a little bit, but if you were a Inuit living up in, mm-hmm. in the North, living on whale blubber and whatever they ate for generations and generations, what are the chances that today on a more keto, meat, fish, high fat diet, you're going to feel better than going to something that your ancestors didn't eat for
totally,
ever, as opposed to whoever who ate pine nuts and grains or whatever in that culture.
When we fast, we stop eating food and allow our body to repair. The research on the benefits and the reset is profound. The problem is we like food. We're addicted to food. Me too. Missing a meal or a day of eating is terrifying to a lot of people. So here is ProLawn. It's a revolutionary plant-based nutrition program that nourishes the body while making the cells believe they're fasting. ProLawn is not a diet. It's science based on Nobel Prize-winning discoveries in medicine. ProLawn provides a 5-day program where you get snacks and soups and beverages all designed to keep your body in a fasting state, while taking away the difficulty and mindset of deprivation. I've fasted for 5 days with nothing but water, and my physical and mental state was incredible. My struggle was just wanting to fulfill my habit of eating. It was significant. ProLawn took that away. It's amazing. I feel like I'm cheating, but getting the benefits of fasting. So right now, ProLawn is offering What Drives You listeners 10% off their 5-day nutrition program. So go to ProLawnLife.com/Kevin. That's ProLawnLife.com/Kevin for the special offer.
Thankfully, the days of building a business website, then having this massive endeavor to integrate an online store are gone. Today, Shopify has fixed all that. I had one business where we actually built the entire website on Shopify's platform. So whether you're just starting out or you're selling $1 million of product already, Shopify is just the industry leader. It works the same for physical products or online and digital, and Shopify is just hands down the best out there. Most importantly, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. It's 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Getting people to buy is not that hard, at least to the buying point, but getting them to actually give their payment info is, and Shopify is king in that department. They also have top-tier customer service, which I think is critical. You can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/Kevin. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/Kevin to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/Kevin.
Friends, I'm pretty candid about my lack of financial prowess. Money and numbers are fairly Greek to me, so I need a lot of guidance. One of my closest friends is a wildly successful wealth manager, and I'm working on some financial literacy and just continually seeking guidance. So I ask you to check out yahoofinance.com. Nobody knows it all, and Yahoo Finance is an incredible resource for the rookies like me or the seasoned investors. You know, before my dad passed away recently, Dave Ramsey and his wife Sharon flew down to visit. We all got to spend a day together, and I was at yahoofinance.com just now. I saw multiple news flashes from Dave and other people that you respect, and they're hitting so many of the hottest areas in finance today. So it's a place to get a snapshot of all aspects of your financial interests, and if you have them, your portfolios. I hadn't realized Yahoo Finance is the number one finance destination, producing a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, customizable charts, and so much more. So for your comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. One more time. yahoofinance.com.
So we can speak into that a lot. That's America is unique in this situation because America, when you look at, now if we look at a food history, how did we get to this point, right? What does American food actually mean? Mm-hmm. And what it means is sort of everything. America is the melting pot. So we have, you can go, we have Italy, you have Little Italy in New York City, and you got Chinatown, and you got, you know, Ethiopian restaurants. And so to eat American, if it doesn't mean fast food, it doesn't really mean anything.
That would be it. You go to another culture, they have an American restaurant, it's burgers and fries,
right. And even the fries came from French fries, yeah, and et cetera, et cetera. So all of us have a, outside of Native American, and we've talked about that with you and your family and your daughter, and probably she is genetically built to have very, very little carbs.
Oh, I mean, we spend time on the Pueblo down there in the reservation, and it's just empty carbs and sugars. I mean, literally, you can go to Walmart there, and it's horrendous. It's like mass genocide.
Right, but why is that? It wasn't because they were listening to their bodies or listening to genetics. That now, why do they eat what they eat? That culture, it's not genetic, it's emotional. It has a big, huge history in American guilt.
It's availability. If they were stuck on the reservation having to grow their own food, but they're not, they got Walmart, they can just drive there.
And that came from
with food stamps.
Money.
Yeah,
they're right. So if you look at the American history and the American U.S. government and what happened with Native American and I grew up in that too, from Oklahoma, part of the Chickasaw Nation, and you know, with my family and all of that, it was a deep awareness for me to try to understand that. And to even for you and I to think we're going to go to a reservation or to a culture and say, "Hey, you guys, there's a better way." What is going to impact the food decisions that people make?
Yeah.
Are going to be so emotionally wrapped up in what they have already been doing and why they have been doing it and
what they're addicted to,
What the habits and addictions, mental habits, emotional habits, and the physical habits. And as we talk even to a well person over here, how many people have been well adjusted, pretty fit? One guy I'm thinking of whose wife used to work in the office and he loves tennis. And I mentioned fasting and, you know, doing this. And he's like, "Oh, no, I get shaky. I get whatever." I'm like, "Well, it's not that you're addicted to food. That's you just are out of shape. You're out of fasting shape." And he just didn't want to have anything. You know.
I would say efficient. I've thought about that back in my, you know, pro cycling days and this pursuit of health and wellness. I want my body to be efficient to deal with stuff. And so, yeah, my body has no problem having not a big dinner, get up in the morning. A lot of times lately, I'm not eating breakfast. And at, you know, 11 o'clock or something, I'll go out on a 1-2 hour mountain bike ride having no fuel. I had some coffee and water, you know, and my body's efficient. I want it to be efficient enough that I don't feel anything different. I feel great. And I come back and then I'll eat later.
I'd go a step further and So now to people out there who are hearing this, I would say this to the Kevin Millers or to the Randy James, to somebody who's not dealing with diabetes or metabolic derangement or problems or things like that, is how is your mountain bike ride on day two
of not eating?
Right. Day three, day four, day five.
Yeah.
Because you should be able to do that mountain bike ride on day five, no food.
Yeah.
And here's why. People think, oh, that's ridiculous. Are you... You would die. And I said, no, you wouldn't.
Because you got to fuel up before, you got to fuel up after, and fuel.
Well, right. That's how people think.
I know.
But go back to 1850s, and you've got the farming community in central Iowa or whatever, but you also have the Zuni reservation right there, and it's like, hey, we haven't had a deer in 5 days. We're going to go run 50 miles
totally.
And chase one down.
I'm thinking about Little House on the Prairie. We read that, some of that. Not long ago. And yeah, they're out on the wagon train, man. And there's no, they don't have, they ran out of food that's with them, you know. And then
which, by the way, we need to say the book is way different than the shows.
It's just talk about racist. It's like one of them. It's horrendous.
Well, that part's horrendous, but it also described that was real.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It was real. The shows were kind of.
Yeah.
Hallmarky.
They were hallmarky. So the book was a little more literal to the time. But yeah, they'd be on the wagon train going west, and they ran out of food, they ran out of water, and 3 days go by and they're just making it. And then Pa sees a deer and he's got to go run after that thing. He's got to be able to perform.
Right. And imagine if you are even an Olympic level athlete and you're in the back of that schooner saying, oh, I'm so famished. I haven't eaten for 3 days. If you had fueled me up, I could run faster than everybody to go get that deer.
I haven't eaten just one meal. I missed a meal. And the common vernacular today is, man, I haven't eaten since last night. You know, it's lunchtime. I'm starved. I'm famished. I'm starved. I mean, because, you know, of course, the kids use it. You have no idea what hunger even feels like. So here in America, we are, I'm going to say that we are primarily, because we are in America, we talk about this, it's a, you know, we beat this drum to death that we are getting sicker and fatter. I mean, it's just a fact, it's just the stats. And I'm going to say it's from too much of the non-life-giving food, too much, processed food and too much. Overfed and malnourished. So we're eating processed foods without any life in them, and we are eating too much. I mean, portions alone, and that is... It seems pretty indicative to our culture specifically. You go to other cultures, and for the most part that I've witnessed, they do not sit down and eat till they are stuffed. And that, I think that became kind of an affluent thing, you know, here in America. You've got enough food, man, and you can just stuff yourself. And now we're used to it. You're supposed to push back and go, oh my gosh, I'm stuffed. And I don't even remember the book at this point. We talk about it so often that just talked about, gosh, maybe it was Food Rules that you portion-wise to be well, I mean, a good barometer measurement is after you eat, you should be able to go on a jog and not be hurting, not be burping and, you know, whatever. And that's countercultural for you.
Right. I don't know where that came from. It might just be us.
No, I read it somewhere.
Okay. Well, we'll credit.
It was a concept of just kind of an easy barometer was, yeah, after you, because think about it. Again, go back to the time before our most recent, you know, couple hundred years.
We sit around all day long.
Yeah,
our work is sitting.
Yeah, you eat and you may need to defend yourself. I mean, you can't.
Or you eat a huge breakfast and you got to go out and
just
lift hay bales all day long.
True. Yeah, yeah.
And then nowadays. So a couple things you just said there. There is a physiologic reason why people can also eat gigantic proportions and still feel quote unquote hungry an hour or two later.
Okay. And crap food.
So if you have the carbohydrate,
yeah,
an empty carbohydrate and no appropriate good healthy grass-fed, grass-finished and all those kind of things fat source, then physiologically there is also what is hunger, what is satiety? What is the thing in the brain that says, oh gosh, I'm full, I'm really stuffed, I really don't want to put another thing in my mouth?
Yeah.
That is, now granted, there's emotional connection, there's all these other kind of things, and we look at your daughter, or remember The Blind Side, that movie where this kid grew up and he's a huge kid and he just could never get enough food, so he just habitually would put food in his pockets even years later. Well, okay. That aside, there's physiologic reasons why you turn down that satiety mechanism. And then some of the largest people that we would know, let's just say somebody who is obese, overweight, it's not...
Which is like 1 in 3 Americans now.
Well, obese is 1 in 3. That's right. Overweight is now over 70%. So, you know, overweight is slim in a lot of cultures. And I would say, okay, those people too can have a meal that's portion size a little bit heavy and literally think 2 hours later or 3 or 4, I'm hungry. Uh-huh. I need a snack. How on earth could that – you've got 20, 30, 40, 50 extra pounds of fuel. Wow. That's there for you to go run 50 miles after a deer if you needed to. But their physical, physiologic, metabolic way of accessing that fuel uh-huh. is so weak, so inefficient, so chunky, so not there that it's just foreign to their body. And they don't go their way. And then we would come along and say, hey, skip a meal or something like that, and it just crashes them.
Yeah.
And so it's no different, though, than if we went to somebody who has sat on the couch for, let's say, a year, literally, or somebody who is in a wheelchair or a bed. Or here's a real example in the military. You know, these guys would get shot, 25-year-old dude. If you're 1 week in an ICU bed, meaning you don't move, mm-hmm. you think you're going to go and run? And be right back where you were? No. So 1 week, it might take a month for that kind of a guy who's already fit to get back to where he was.
Right.
And so he's out of shape. But let's take a video game playing, couch surfing, you know, whatever kind of a guy who's mostly on the couch for a year, which is kind of a lot of people, uh-huh. right? And you say, hey, go walk around the block. He's going to say, it hurts my feet, it hurts my ankles, it hurts my knees, I get short of breath. I noticed it this last weekend when we went camping with, you know, a few of the guys from church. And one guy, he was admittedly new to this elevation, out of shape, and we're walking along on the flat part. So we haven't started the hill part yet. Mm-hmm. And we get to the trailhead, it's up. We're doing a 14er. And we are all stopping there, and we're just kind of talking. And he comes up huffing.
Wow.
Right? So now imagine that within the food place. And if your body, and people will say, oh my gosh, I get a headache, I get hangry, I get shaky, I get jittery. So that's part of our food problem here is food is fuel. It is also emotions and joy and taste and all those kind of things. But if you eat the kind of food and then don't access it with your activities or your thought process, it goes to a place where it becomes harder and harder and harder to access.
Yeah.
And then for you to go get it means you more and more and more have to skip a meal or do what feels like weird, draconian dietary measures and to get to the energy.
Well, isn't that part of the keto type
yes.
thing?
Okay. That's why that got, you know, and again, goodness gracious, it's so confusing if you... Because these smart docs write these books and they say, well, here's why keto works because of this part of your physiology and yada, yada. And the, you know, the carb, fuel, prime the pump, those kind of people, here's why this way works. And so for the layperson in the middle of that, it's frustrating, but it is for sure keto is going to work for some people. And for sure, fuel priming and that kind of thing is going to work for other people. And so how do you know which one of those people you are? And I would say, gosh, in a sense, you just got to kind of go out there and live it.
Well, even if it does work, is it something that you do for the rest of your life every single day? And I would say no, that it's still a cyclical thing.
Well, yes. And I was going to say, yeah, you fast every single day because you must, because nobody can eat 24/7. Whether it's 2 meals a day or 6 meals a day, there's fasting in between.
Right.
So I think it's important for people to have a relationship in their head with fasting, almost as important as what is your relationship with food mm-hmm. and feeding. Now we're talking about food as fuel. And again, most people, at the very beginning, you said people just eat to fuel themselves and to go. And I would say, no, they eat for entertainment is why I think most people actually eat.
Well, true. Because, yeah, let's talk about fasting and food as fuel in the reality of what you said, that I should be able to not, and both of us, I mean, we don't have a lot of, I have more fat than you do, but not a lot of reserves. We should be able to not eat, literally not eat a solid food. You got to have water for 5 days, and I should still be able to go out and do my hour mountain bike ride. So yeah, let's do
not fuel. Only that, not should. I would, Kevin, I'll bet $100,000 right now that you can.
That I can.
You will not, no, can. You will not die. You cannot eat for 5 days and go do that.
Yeah.
I know you can.
Yeah, absolutely.
You might have a headache and a tummy ache and not feel so great, and it might be slower, but you will do it.
So that's fuel over here. So the reality back, and you said this multiple times during the show, that we eat for, you use the word emotions. I mean, it's just an emotional thing.
Habit?
Just you said entertainment. I mean, it is. Taste. Want that. No different than the reason that we... people, you know, flipping.
You and I are sipping on a coffee right now, not because we are.
Well, no, that's God. That's different. Yeah, sure. Yeah, we're just feeding our appetites. Back to our appetites. We are feeding our appetites. I want to today. Yeah. I am looking forward to. I haven't eaten yet, but whenever I do, I will enjoy that. And tonight, especially, I'll think about what I'm planning on having. Yeah, that it is. Even that, just that reality of fuel and emotion. That it we're so again skewed. Especially, I think, in America, as far as what food is, even if we would just realize primarily I eat for joy. I eat for my taste buds. I eat for appetite. That's the primary reason that most Americans, at least, eat. That's our primary. It's a recreation.
Entertainment. Mm-hmm. I would say be careful, because very high up in there also is social. Us sure. At lunch, I do look forward to hanging out on the deck, sitting in the sun, talking about whatever with you, with John, eating great food.
We could do that without eating. It's just we enjoy eating along with it as well. We don't need to. We don't have to.
Right. I don't like hanging out with you that much.
Okay. Well, at least that helps. Okay. Well, so this is the psychology of food is what we're talking about.
Which we talked about the history of food. We talked about the psychology of food. I hope we're putting gravitas on when people say, oh, so you're saying I should skip breakfast or I should. Yeah. No, people need to be smart and wise and gentle with their spouses and their neighbors and their kids to be able to have this kind of dialogue. This is hard.
Yeah.
Or I should say it's weighty, and we live in a society that's blue, red, black, white, good, bad. We don't want to sort of walk and chew gum at the same time where it's like, okay, wait a minute. There's a time and a place when I'm going to say cake and ice cream is awesome. It is godly, righteous, and you should do it. It would be wrong for you to withhold yourself from that on your birthday, on your wedding, on a celebration. But if the next morning, like we said so many times, is milk and cereal, that is very, very close to cake and ice cream. And you just don't know. You're not aware, and you're listening to the advertisement on the box, which has nothing to do with your personal health.
Fortified with 8 essential vitamins and iron. Yeah,
it's immoral. Yeah. It's wrong, and that's kind of what we're speaking. That's why we're talking.
Well,
about
I want so I want to hit it again. I know we've talked about it, and if people have listened to a lot of our shows, they've heard it before. But let's just again to look at the reality of the culture that we live in. And I'm going to pick on America specifically. Of what you said that way back, let's say 300 years ago, they're eating. We would hope, you know, they're eating the foods that they grew, real foods, and then once in a while they would have the cake where somebody has gotten some good flour or some.
But there again, think how long it took. To make cake. Cake was cake and special because it took more time, more money, more effort.
Yeah. Flour and sugar, stuff that they probably didn't, most of them weren't growing sugar, so they would go buy that at the markets, whatever store in town. So flour, sugar, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, you get carbs and sugars, and they'd have that cake. And what you're saying right there, the reality that in America, there's a lot of people today in 2020 who get up in the morning and have cereal and milk with the equivalent ingredients of cake, sugar and carbs of cake. So they just had a celebratory thing that they think is cereal. Maybe they got the good cereal, Life cereal or Grape Nuts was when we were kids, fortified with 8 essential vitamins. It's complete crap. There's no life-giving, you know, food in it. And then for lunch, you know, everybody goes out and fast food or a pizza or
and has a piece of cake again called hamburger bun.
Yeah. Yeah. So again, in that form of a lunch, they have, again, the ingredients of cake. And then at dinner time, it's fish and chips or whatever it may be with, again, the ingredients of cake. And we're having cake every day. And it proves out, if it sounds facetious, it proves out in the fact that in 2020 in America, in our affluent society, we are continually sicker and fatter. I mean, the stats are undeniable in that sense.
Right.
So what should you eat? I mean, you mentioned breakfast. We look at that. So I just pulled up, you know, ABC News. So this is not a scientific story. I have no idea where they got it. But they're just talking about, hey, what do Americans eat for breakfast? And well, right off the bat, let's hit that. They said, actually, I don't know if I got the stat, but I looked at it.
Four out of 10, yeah.
Did I say 4 out of 10? Skip breakfast, which at some point our moms were saying, that's bad. This is the healthiest meal of the day.
Which I think is an urban legend. And here again, of all of those nutritionists that you just mentioned, one will say breakfast is the most important meal. One will say breakfast is the, you know, if we're going to talk about meal timing, when should you eat? And if you talk to the fasting people, your ghrelin, which is your hunger, sort of hormone, is lowest in the morning. So many, many people have their lowest amount of appetite in the morning, and you're sort of foisting food on, like, one of my kids does not want to eat breakfast and one does. So
I generally don't. That's why I'm not. Did you eat this breakfast this morning?
No.
When's the last?
And I walked to work.
Oh, and you walked to work. I can't remember when I ate breakfast. I mean, it could have been a week ago. I'm not paying attention. But so on that, but if we go back to that, those 4 out of 10 Americans who are skipping out of the survey, those are not the healthier ones. Chances are there is just obese and sick. So the fact that they skipped it and you and I skipped it,
it's not a connection to, right. Who's healthy and why did I skip it? And why did they skip it? And what did they, and many, many people will quote unquote skip breakfast, but they will, in their mind, they're skipping breakfast, and that doesn't include the bar in their pocket and the coffee on the way to work
at 9 or 10 or whatever,
even at breakfast time.
Now they're starving. I didn't even. Now I'm starving, and I'm going to have this empty carb. Well, and it said the survey said 31% have cereal, which I don't know if there's any cereal that's.
I'll tell you. So if we do eat breakfast, and oatmeal is on your list there too, but. You know, like your kids, when they came over, and I often brag about my oatmeal.
Say it. Give the ingredients.
Here's
Dr. Randy James oatmeal.
I think it's a $10 meal if you went to a restaurant.
Oh, probably.
Because it's a small amount of steel-cut oats, like what would fit in the palm of your hand. And I plopped it.
Just talk on that, because I mean, you go to the store, they got a big thing of instant oats. It looks healthy. Then they got the whole oats, and then they've got organic oats, gluten-free oats. You're talking about steel cut. What's the freaking difference?
Well, I actually had to look that up one day because I was like, if it's cut by steel or if it's cut by metal.
Steel cut oats, you have to cook a lot longer, and they're a nuttier texture that some of my kids like it, and some of them don't at all.
Right. Same in our family. It's amazing how similar oats, rice, millet, all of the grains, and if you look at the plants, they all look kind of similar. So these are, you know, the head of the rice grain or the wheat grain or even just the weeds that we're looking at outside the window there, they all have that head.
Yeah.
So oats are the same. And that groat, like you call it, buckwheat groats, and is the whole kernel. And rolled oats means they squish it out, they flatten it. So a processing thing that helps them to preserve longer on the shelf.
But does that give it less nutritional?
Yeah, squishes out some of the fiber and the oils.
Okay.
And so we're saying don't do any of that. And when they say steel cut, it doesn't matter if it's cut by steel or whatever else. It's just this is not rolled.
Okay.
It's harvested in such a way as to keep the whole groat, the whole kernel. Just like brown rice and a whole kernel kind of thing, rather than parboiled or...
I'll never forget. I met a guy, man, it's years ago. I met a guy who was an oat farmer. He was an organic oat farmer like in Kansas or Oklahoma or something like that. And I thought it was interesting because he said he eats steel cut oats.
And he knows oats.
I know. So that was interesting. Yeah. So he's, you know, healthy guy, but yeah.
So we have a big bucket of that. I grab just a loose handful of that, toss it in the pot. And yeah, you have to boil it you know, 5 to 10 minutes, soften it up, and it will be chewier. And then I will put a full tablespoon of extra virgin cold pressed olive oil, but not
coconut.
I mean coconut oil. Yeah. Right.
And olive oil is going to give you a little Italian flavor.
Savory oats there. coconut oil.
Coconut oil, which is the fat.
Right.
Which is a good
thing. Not a huge amount. So we're not saying, oh, it's extra virgin cold press coconut oil, so the more the better, right? Like a lot of people in this keto world are saying, well, it's good for me, therefore
you have three, four, yeah.
just more. No.
Okay.
And it's, and that's where I would say my expertise would come in as the doc or physician or whatever else to do the labs and say, well, what is your genetic history, et cetera, to say, should you have a little bit of that or a little bit more? And so then the next thing is a handful of various seeds, nuts, and one of my favorite is the cacao nibs. So
Right.
raw cacao, which is, it's chocolate, but it, there's no sugar, there's no whatever. And
but you're saying nuts and seeds, so think, so we got chia seeds, you could do...
I do pumpkin seeds. Mostly, sunflower seeds, and then, yeah, separately would sometimes do chia.
But then nuts, so like walnuts, pecans, something along that line.
Yeah, almonds, walnuts would be my favorite. Okay. Cashews,
it, which I do some at home too, and I've got a chopper, so I'll make them smaller sometimes. Anyways, okay, keep going.
Yep. So a handful of nuts out of my nut bag there, and then I will put a liberal amount of cinnamon.
Uh-huh.
Love that. And then I play a little bit of cloves, a little bit of, you know, fiddle around in the spice rack with those kind of things. We'll use good honey and maybe a tablespoon.
Now, sometimes you'll do, my kids said you do fruit, like cut up an apple or something.
And then the last thing is my favorite thing is now in season, it's berries, blueberries and cherries.
Oh, okay.
So my birthday was just the other day and cherries is a favorite. So we made a cherry cobbler, right? Which is, okay, these weren't steel cut oats, but they were, it was my birthday. And so we did oats, but it was the amount of sugar, because I don't want it super sweet. It was less sugar and it was brown sugar. So there's a time and a place for that. But my oatmeal in the morning was not a cherry cobbler in a different form.
Yeah.
And what I have noticed about that kind of brunch on usually on Saturday, Sunday. So, and it's, you know, a half a bowl, I guess. But I can stand up from that meal and run.
Yeah.
Go. And what I noticed with that meal is, it's kind of frustrating because if we eat at 11 a.m., it's a struggle to be hungry at 6 or 7 p.m.
Hmm.
That's the concept of sticks to your ribs.
Yeah, that's good.
That food will fuel for a long time.
Yeah.
Well, and it's so good, I almost get mad at it because I want to eat more, but I'm full.
It's weighty. I like that. So that is an old thing, stick to your ribs, but that's... I mean, that's legit. Well, so hit on the, we had on that, again, this is, you know, some ABC survey. I just pulled it up real quick, but there's like 1 out of 10 do a muffin, bagel, toast, pastry.
Which is a nothing food.
It's just high, generally high. And the people who get the organic, healthy muffin that has 1,000 calories. I mean, it's outrageous. Some of these, especially if you're going to get it at Starbucks or whatever. Think of it. You're choosing to have a celebratory piece of cake.
Piece of cake.
Probably the equivalent of a couple pieces of cake in any, pretty much any, what do we say, pastry, bread, a bready item.
You know what? I would go, I bet, you know, for our listeners, they're smart people, and maybe they're not doing that, but they're getting, at the health food store, they pay a little more, and what do they get? They get a breakfast bar, Larabar.
Oh.
And now I'm going to pick on my kids.
Well, the Larabar, I mean, technically I like the ingredients, but then you look at it, the sugar content, it's just so high.
Yeah.
Of any of them, pretty much.
And that's my point there is, even in, so my colleagues who are on the functional medicine side and these great websites and, you know, a Quest bar or something like that, it's a better choice than a 1,000 calorie muffin.
Yeah.
But it's still quick and easy. It's carb based, and even
it's processed.
And I would say if you can't take time, now here I'm talking to me and our society in general. Part of what the problem here is, we have divorced our life from the time it takes to create a meal, food. And I would, so to you and me, not again to somebody who's diabetic or somebody who's been on the proverbial couch and they're not ready to run a 5K.
Who's in a significant place of brokenness.
They're metabolically broken. You can't handle this. I'm actually going to challenge people out there, and I hope you can handle this in the future. But when a meal comes around and you got up too late, you don't have the 5 minutes to boil your oats to soften them up, then fast.
Yeah, skip it.
Skip it. And that doesn't mean grab a bar on the way out the door. It means enjoy the extra time that you have to do something else and fast.
Well, so we have a friend, Scott Stearman, who I had on the Ziegler Show podcast recently, and he shared this. It's a cool story. He shared this this last weekend while they were here visiting. He was driving, and he said he just having some prayer time with the Lord, and he said, God, tell me about food. What do you have food? So this is, you know, wherever you are in your faith walk, just go with the concept. And what came to him, long story short, was God saying, eat what I made. And I'll add on the end of that, in its natural form. So back to your bar, even though it may have whatever, a whole grain, a berry, some kind of a sweetener, whatever that came from some natural form, it is now in its unnatural form. It's gone through whatever process to be formed into a bar, to be put in a wrapper that can stay on a shelf and not rot for a long. That in itself is a big telltale sign. And that is not, you know, what God made in its natural form. And if we look at that, so an egg, you know, came out now. Natural form. I was going to say
you have to be careful because I bought my steel cut oats from a store in a package.
In a package, sure. I mean, we got to do the best that we can because we're not out there growing our stuff. Right. But as close as we can to the food that God, you know, that grew on the earth, whatever your again faith belief, grew on the earth in as natural form as possible. So broccoli, I'm not growing my own broccoli either. So if you can get it close by from a farmer's market, great. But the best you can get of a broccoli, even if it's an organic at the store, to take that home. And you can wash it and eat it raw. That's fine. If you want to cook it, its best form is going to be what? Maybe steamed to keep the most nutrients in?
I don't want to answer there.
Boiling it, isn't
the
that?
The best form is the way you'll eat it. I don't like raw broccoli. I like it sautéed with spices. That's the best form for me.
I like it raw. I'm better than you.
Right. Okay, yes. Okay. You Pharisee.
Well, so coming back, you know, to the, hitting on not to make breakfast the focus. Well,
you mentioned Scott.
Yeah.
So I think he would be okay with me saying, you know, he was here as a patient before he moved to Oklahoma. And my encouragement to Scott and Hermine, so you've got both ends of the spectrum there, one on the bigger side and one on a thin side, right?
Yeah.
And Scott would say there's been a struggle with, you know, he's lost a lot. But where is the weight and that kind of thing into both of them? And especially, I think, to Scott, I would say, one, my encouragement, my challenge to him and to people, and I grew up in Oklahoma. I am an Oklahoman. But the obesity percentage there and in the South in general is way more than 30% now. Mm-hmm. God made fasting. Feast on fasting, meaning you cannot create the peptide Y, the ghrelin, nobody needs to walk around saying, oh gosh, what's my ghrelin today?
I don't even know what that is.
It's one of the satiety hormones.
Okay.
Or hunger hormones.
Satiety. So what satiates, what makes you feel?
Yeah. And now we're back to our happiness, blessedness, contentment, satisfaction. Nobody is training their children or themselves to be satisfied with a skipped meal. Think of that doctor that you read who says, what I just said seems so extreme. Crazy.
Oh, right.
Like what a religious freaky fanatic you are.
Yeah.
But I would still go to Scott and say, if you or we or me, if Kevin Miller isn't experienced with what it feels like to be 3-day, 4-day, 5-day fasted, then that's extreme.
Yeah, here's the book. It's Undoctored by William Davis, ND. Yeah, and he has a great quote in there. It's a thing that stood out in the book where he says, so people respond to him and go, gosh, so you want me to eat extreme? He says, no, I want you to understand that the way that our culture eats is extreme.
Yes.
In the span of time, from thousands of years, that in the past couple hundred years, we now eat extreme in our dietary intake or
We don't ever limit our intake.
And now we have to be very gentle. And I would say, and I would go to Scott and say, if he says, man, I just get a headache, I'd say, okay, you know, we're not going to take a guy off the couch and say, okay, our standard here is a 5-minute mile. We're just not going to do that. That's ridiculous. But if the guy says, I'd like to get in shape, okay, let's start. Let's walk around the block.
But that's a good point. That's probably a primary ingredient in the lack of success for a lot of people in changing their diet is they do too much too fast. Even with exercise, they go, okay, I've been sedentary for a year. I'm going to go out and run. And I went out today and run 2 miles. Well, you're probably going to get shin splints. You're going to get lung burn. Zig Ziglar's really well known for his BAM program. He was out of shape, overweight. And so he went out and he walked around the block. That was it. And the next day he did it and he added a mailbox. So it was a block and a mailbox, BAM. And he added a mailbox. The next day he added one more. And this incremental thing to where, I don't know, it was like 14 months later, he's actually able to run a 5K or something like that. You know, mm-hmm. it was an incremental thing. Same thing with the diet. Some people have the personality and the propensity. They can just make a 180 change and stick to it. I don't think that's the norm. I think most people will have success by adding. My wife talked about adding in. She said, instead of thinking about what I shouldn't be eating, just add in. Have some more water, have some more veggies and fill that up. Then you're less prone to be hungry and eat the junk that's out there. But think about more of adding in. What are the good things you can add in? And by proxy, you should leave less room for the stuff that you're trying to leave out instead of just thinking about what can I cut? Whatever works for you, obviously.
Right. Even on our fasting days, even though facetiously we just said, hey, we want to be out on the deck with food, but on a fasting day, I would make sure that there's deck time
because I've gone for a walk time.
Yeah. And that's enjoyable. And, or make sure that I for lunch, instead of saying, okay, I can't do that now, I have to just go to work, I would say, you know what? I'm going to watch an episode of Dude Perfect. I'm going to enjoy some mind candy over here for whatever. That's fair.
And even thinking about like the critical day, think about everybody who has that critical day of, man, I've got this big work project. I've got this presentation. I've got this. That's when I'm more prone to think, man, I'm not going to eat so that my body's at full tilt, focus on my brain.
Okay, but let's go the other way.
What?
For the person who is a couch potato with their fasting, I'm going to say, hey, when you got a $1 million client or whatever that day, don't fast on that day. You're not ready for it.
Oh, okay, right.
To you, I'd say, yeah, don't eat a bad breakfast on this day.
But maybe start off with your oatmeal recipe and have a good stick to your ribs. Yeah, breakfast. Let's hit a little bit. I mean, we keep coming. You and I are so conceptual with everything. You know, again, for breakfast, saying skipping it is a great option. You talked about oatmeal. I mean, another common one that, you know, here in America is eggs. Mm-hmm. Which, again, you can have, talking about back to your oats, you can have eggs in an organic, you know, from your neighbor or as close by as you can, high quality egg that you whatever, boil, fry, whatever. Or you can go, like in our town here, you can go over to the local diner place and have an omelet that, again, is 1,000 calories with God knows what put in it. It's a very different form of that egg. So what form is your egg?
Right. So on the egg side, I would say that the key thing there is not necessarily organic, but range fed.
Oh, okay.
Right. So, because if it says organic, they're getting organic chicken feed, right? Okay. It, you know, corn, gluten, soy.
So is this a chicken that has been fed hormones? What are you getting through that chicken? Are you getting one that was out in a barnyard eating grubs like it should?
Right.
Because that's your point. You don't want one that had grains. That's not its natural food.
Well, chickens eat everything, right? So, but if they're at the restaurant, their key thing there is to get cheap eggs. Mm-hmm. So, you know, 80 cents a dozen or whatever, that's coming from some hen house.
The most hormones.
That's the industrialized production of eggs.
Yeah.
That is, those are not happy chickens. They're hormone fed based, whatever. And is that going to kill you today if you eat that this morning? No, but in general, over time. And the other thing, both with oats and eggs, because we do eggs a lot as well, is the concept of rotation. You said cycling, and I just want people to hear Like some people will come in and say, you know, I gave up cereal and now I eat fruit for breakfast every morning. Doc, I eat blueberries every morning. I'll say, well, now you're going to ruin blueberries, right? There needs to be, there's no food except for water that's intended to be eaten all the time, every day. So just
even for you, so you may do oats and then the next day you could do fruit and the next day you don't eat and then the next day you may do eggs and then that would be more relevant than we do get in this habit. Grandpa every morning had a boiled egg and a piece of toast and coffee every single morning. It's probably could have done better.
Right. That's not bad per se, but he could have been better.
Probably could have done better. Just to say on the, I mean, bread is the bread and grains is the consummate American breakfast. And for some reason we have to have that. The thought of having a salad in the morning is
broccoli, asparagus.
Yeah, it's counterculture. And yet we have other cultures. If you read, we talk so often about Dan Buettner's book, The Blue Zones, where so many of those cultures are having vegetables, fish, all kinds of things that we would say are dinner or lunch items. And they don't have, for some reason in America, we've been brainwashed to think breakfast has to be contained within these items. Yeah, in that survey, I mean, there was no percentage of people that were having a salad.
Steak and vegetables.
or fish, yeah, or sushi. I mean, my gosh, there's a lot of the country, the Asian, that are having sushi for breakfast and stuff. I would say the grains that we have here in America, for the most part, grains and the breads and stuff. What are the worst ways to start your day?
Yes. So we struggle in my house because, you know, teenage kids, and they want easy. They don't like new things. And so for me, a huge treat is once a month is to have a piece of toast that's piled high with almond butter and honey. And for me, that's like cake. That's the treat because that's what I used to have.
What kind of toast? What kind of bread?
Gluten-free, you know.
Really?
Yeah.
I usually do the, if I do that once in a blue moon, Ezekiel bread.
Yeah.
Which is
I think
sprouted.
I'm more sensitive to the gluten side of things, and I have kids that are.
And you've got the gluten-free breads generally have corn in them, which I'm sensitive to.
Which you're sensitive to, right.
And they're processed. But they are more processed.
Highly. Gluten-free is, I would think, is worse quality than Ezekiel and the real grains and that kind of
and,
thing.
And on that, and I, you know, I'm not the scientist or the nutritionist, but I, you know, looking at Ezekiel bread and some of the others with the sprouted grains, mm-hmm. I'm told that some people can digest them better. Mm-hmm. So I don't
and
know.
Sourdough.
That's what we do.
If I didn't have the kids around, if it was just me and Marcy, I think we would go towards making our own. We would import the grain from Europe. We would get a different.
Well, you said sourdough. I keep thinking I should do that.
I should. It costs time. It costs money. It costs effort.
I should pay somebody to make it for me.
There you go. And actually, there's one of the patients just told me about a place down in the Springs, a European something or other that it's not gluten free. They don't do that, but they do use European stock.
And there's again, you know, testing it, test the different breads if you have to do bread. But again, we do so. It's a treat. We look at it as a treat. Even the best of the best, it's a treat. It's
and where bread used to be, you know, because even on the
a staple, the bread is a staple in America.
Well, that's right. But what it used to be, and on those bread packages, what you see is a mama who's got this home-baked bread, and, you know, she's it's sort of the picture of what bread.
Wonder bread. how you can live eating that
what stuff. Somebody very smartly and astutely said, I bet I could make that faster, easier, better, cheaper. Yeah. It got industrialized.
And pretty. Nice and white flour.
But real bread with real grain that is thick and hearty and all of those kinds, not
and
cake.
Nutty. Yeah.
That is what we lost. Well, bread, we lost that in 1940s
again,
or 50s probably.
Time, yeah,
right. And to now buy hearty, seedy, grainy bread costs twice as much.
Yeah.
And people, like my kids, turn their nose up at that. They're like, yeah, I don't like that. It's got little seeds in it. Mm-hmm. They want cake.
Mm-hmm.
And if I feed it to them, they're going to continue to want cake.
Yeah.
Why would they not?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, and gosh, yeah, looking I mean, we grew up, so many of us our age, and you had grain and breads for breakfast. Lunch was a sandwich.
On white bread.
But even if, no, ours was the Roman meal.
Roman meal. Yeah, that was the healthy one. Yeah, that was us too.
It was brown. Yeah, it was brown. Exactly. At that. And then, you know, evening time is, you know, could just as well be some kind of a breaded.
Well, we always had a roll.
There you go. Dinner rolls. Gosh. Yeah. Yeah. And so we're back to that extreme aspect. I mean, just looking, I don't know that we need to go through the specific foods of what is, you know, life giving or not, but I mean, vegetables,
yeah.
How many people in the culture, I don't like vegetables much. How can it be like saying, I'm not much into sleep. You can't do that.
Right.
Not to be well.
Right. To be optimally.
Yeah. You cannot. Vegetables.
It's like saying, I just really don't like the smell of gas. So I just don't go to gas stations. I pour other stuff in my car and I hope for the best.
That's funny. Actually, that's pretty good. Yeah. So, I mean, vegetables, I mean, to do that, I mean, nobody is going to be harmed. Maybe one in a billion for some reason I can't even think of by having vegetables for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Or half your meal. I mean, just vegetables, nuts, seeds.
And there we go. People ask, what's the diet? So, Dr. James, what's the diet? And here's what I always say. The word is modified, meaning if you like it, you're going to eat what you like. So all of us like cake and ice cream. So when you said, I listen to my body, I'd say, be careful. Because your body's calling out for coffee every day. You got to be careful about that. So everybody out there says, I know what I want. I'm like, Be careful. Just be aware that human bodies aren't very smart.
Well, back to our show. I don't know what number it was of elevate your appetite. We're going to have an appetite. So if
put your brain in there.
Even that, if you had to have bread, train yourself to like the best
the
bread
right
there
ones.
Is.
Yeah. Yes. So modified, paleo. So there's the keto influence. Mm-hmm. Now, paleo doesn't mean you eat a mastodon every day. Mm-hmm. Paleo. If you go back to paleo, whatever, nobody knows, right? So it's conjecture. It was probably the biggest portion was vegetables still and root vegetables. So high carb vegetables, beets, carrots, grubby kind of things.
Well, it may be one big meal because they killed the mastodon.
One big meal of beets, roots, grubs. This is paleo, truly. And then... yeah, they got lucky they got a deer, but that was once a month, once a whatever. You know, and then they gorged or something, and then they had to go back to, then they had two or three days of, hey, let's relax, and then they had to go hunting again. So that's the paleo influence, is grass-fed and finished, wild-caught, free-range eggs, all of those kind of things, which, yes, it costs more. Eat less of that.
Which you're not going to get. And then there's the hassle factor of all of this, which is you're not going to get that at your local grocery store.
You're going to have to go find it?
We don't, at least. Maybe depends where you're at. But, yeah, we got to get it at
a
specific store.
At the cost. And people say, well, it costs twice as much. And I say, yes, skip one meal a day.
Well, yeah.
Don't have any snacks.
Well, and I go many days without having a meat source at all. If I do, it's usually fish. But even if we look at that, I mean, a little
and
can
eggs.
I don't do eggs.
We'll
pass that. Obviously, some people are going to have sensitivities, allergies, and tolerances. Right. For some reason, my body, literally on an allergy test, comes back, it does not like eggs. Don't know why. It doesn't mean eggs are bad. It just doesn't work for me. You got to figure that out, and everybody can. I don't know if I've ever met anybody who says I'm allergic to broccoli, but... maybe
my
somebody
kids.
No, that's an appetite allergy, not a literal one. But
well, to finish, modified paleo, meaning yes, really good meat sources.
Yeah.
Mediterranean, modified paleo Mediterranean diet. Now, a Mediterranean diet does not mean pizza and pasta. That's critical. So, if you go to an American Italian restaurant, what do you get? Huge amount of pasta, huge amount of pizza, huge amount of bread.
A huge gigantic
amount. Now, people sort of try to knock their guilt down by having a salad first, but it's generally not a hearty salad. It's kind of, you know, a whatever salad. So by Mediterranean, we mean number one is the vegetable content there. Salad, veggies, olives.
I was going to say olives.
Will figure prominently.
Fat and talk about stick to your... ribs.
Yes. So a salad that is spinach, cabbage, kale based, romaine, and those kind of lettuces.
Not the iceberg.
And with a good dose of, and here I'd be very picky about my oil. Extra virgin, cold press from a good source, because olive oil is modified by your, if you're getting cheap stuff, it's not true olive oil. So modified paleo Mediterranean and fish. So that's the main meat source in the Mediterranean diet is fish, not chicken. That would be less often.
Which, again, you got to do you went back to your grass finish. To do fish, it is harder and harder and harder and harder to get a decent fish.
That's right.
Up in our little town right here, I mean, the best you can do, it says...
Go catch your own is a trout.
Yeah, which we have one option, trout. That's it, period. So to go to the store and you want salmon and tuna, and tuna, everybody, you know, it's mercury and salmon, the wild caught. Is it really... And you've got to do the best.
So your cost goes way up. That's right. So,
well, we don't even have access. Really, to get the best, we would do, they have these services now where you get it, you know, 2-day FedEx from Alaska,
right?
Which, talk about costs, astronomical.
So that, you and I like the smoke fish. So you can, but to get fresh, you're right. Yeah. It's just not going to happen. So we've found our sources for the frozen wild caught.
But I wanted to even go back to the amount. Isn't an appropriate amount of a meat source for a day about 3 ounces, which is about the size of a tuna can? My understanding was, I mean, for a day, I mean, that's enough meat. That's a viable amount of meat. I think most people are going to have more than that as a meat source for every meal. I mean, if you get a burger, it's going to be more than that. If you get a steak, a chicken, even a fish, man, you know, the amount, the portion size are...
Yeah, here's...
That's like a hunter-gatherer. This is all I'm going to have for the next 3 days. Well, then sure, knock yourself out. But for every meal, or for even one meal a day, the amounts are just astronomical.
That's where I would... I just, in my own personal life and even for patients, I don't think in terms of ounces or count carbs or calories or things like that. And, you know, do you have a weightlifter? Do you have...
What's your goal?
Right. Now we're into the optimal kind of... And if somebody is out there that says, look, I don't want to think about it. I'd like to lose 10 pounds. I want to, you know, I'm busy. I'm trying to work out, you know, 2, 3, 4 times a week. What should my protein kind of thing be? Most Americans are building their meals around a meat kind of a thing. Then I would say, yes, a pretty good, and now this helps you cut down the cost, and we're back to that tuna can size. Yeah, that should be a sliver of meat. 2 eggs, really high quality, good source, kind of, there's your eggs and go to town on your broccoli. My goal is the half the plate of every meal is vegetable. Now, you can't really do broccoli with oats or whatever, so that's a little bit different. But for lunch and dinner, is half the plate is veggie.
What's your lunch today? Did you bring it?
Yeah.
What'd you bring?
Well, leftover. So
taco night. Lunch for us is almost always leftovers from dinner. Though here at the office, if I'm not going to skip lunch, which I might, and I want something, I always have like wild caught can of salmon and some frozen veggies at the least.
I'll skip it or.
But generally, we have something from dinner night before. So what do you have?
Taco. Wow. In fact, we just bought a quarter of a cow from the farmer we know.
Grass-fed, grass-finished.
And
so you filled up your freezer.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people, and you know, we live in a bubble. We kind of live in a blue zone have an extra
venison.
We'll have an extra freezer or a deep freezer or something to fill up with. Up here, elk, mule deer is what we got up here, or cow.
But a quarter, so we did that last year. It brought the cost down to $4 to $5 a pound, which is really good compared to 6 or 7 in the stores for grass-fed, grass-finished.
Yeah, but what's regular beef?
I have no idea. I haven't bought it in decade.
And we don't, and you know, for my family, we don't eat beef. For whatever reason,
don't like it,
we don't eat much of anything but fish. But you know, either way, to have it, and so you've got that.
So your taco. Right, but it's taco. So black beans that we do organic, and but it was canned. And there again, you know, we bought an Instapot, and should I make a big old thing of beans and freeze them myself?
And we do sometimes. I'll do them if I think ahead far enough, which I often don't. So we have canned a lot too.
And just a whole, and most of the bowl is then cabbage and spinach and tomatoes and avocado.
I'm
looking forward to that now.
I think I have. Actually, I don't. It's mainly Terry did this big cabbage thing. She's been in a cabbage kick too, so she sautéed it with a bunch of stuff. I think that's the majority of my thing, and then I threw whatever leftovers on top of it, which might be broccoli, cauliflower, and I think all the meat. We had fish. I think it was all gone, so I can't remember what else I put on it. Maybe that was it. Now there's something else.
We had mahi-mahi last night. We haven't.
Oh, That's good.
It tasted like Hawaii.
Seared tuna is kind of top of our list. So, I mean, I think people get the concept. I did want to also put in here, we talked about portions, you know, real food, and Food Rules is a book we talked about so often by Michael Pollan. It's a little book. You can read it in 30 minutes. It's funny and it's got some hooks that'll stick with you, but it talks about what is food. And so much of what we talk about the middle aisles of the grocery store. Michael talks in there. It is not classified as real food. It is processed dead food.
Yeah. What's the real food subtitle on Food Rules?
Eat food. Mostly plants, not too much.
Yep.
Yeah, it's a great one. Real quick though, just to put in there, because we're talking about the things that we put in and calories and whatnot, I want to put in liquids, beverages, what you call, because those are often insidious culprits that get in there that we don't take into account. Meaning, right now you and I are both drinking an Americano. So it's just straight. Well, you might've had a little cream in yours. So, but you're basically straight coffee, no calories, no junk. That is not the primary thing that Starbucks and the other places sell. They sell more technical milkshakes than any other place, fast food on planet Earth. So people go in there and get their milkshake. We're back to cake. Instead of coffee, they're having cake.
Didn't we see the stats on that they were the largest purveyors of milk in the world?
Well, I heard it termed technically milkshakes. I mean, of a processed... Okay. You know, even
even sugar too.
Yeah. I think so. But beverages that are slipping in there is people's coffees and teas that they have then put this extra stuff in, and talk about calories and what's adding into the obesity and sickness
liquid
and illnesses.
Liquid calories.
Then we've got sodas. And if somebody listening to this is not aware, I hope they're look at the sugar content. It just continues to go up. It's going to have any can of soda is going to have or bottle 50-70 grams of sugar, which the amount of tablespoons of sugar, it's just disgusting. If you had to sit down and just put in your mouth those tablespoons of sugar, you'd gag. But we drink it in our things. So then we go to diet, which is you give the stick up. You guys don't do diet. Sometimes we'll do some of that. I don't want the sugar, but it's crap.
Yeah,
the artificial sweeteners.
There is no natural form of sweet liquid. Mm-mm. So the body, and there again, is not built to drink calories. It just does not exist in nature. Mm-hmm. Right, food. So there is no liquid that carries calories with it.
Well, and I'm addicted to an unnatural one, doing the flavored seltzers, you know, but that's the
well, but you said addicted. It's your habit, it's your emotions. It's you like to sip and those
well
kind of
it's
things.
My alternative to because I do want something that tastes
a better
good.
Choice
yeah I want something that tastes good.
Well, mine is tea,
yeah, which I wish I liked, but I don't. But the next big thing is culprit, again, I'm going to call it, is energy drinks. Those have gotten, you were talking about the healthy bars. We're in this age of energy drinks. And I would say, is there anybody on planet Earth who needs an energy drink? If you do, something's wrong. Just like if we need coffee to be alert,
that's the problem. Right.
Why do you need an energy drink?
And my son, you know, the teenage, and so admittedly, what, you know, Red Bull, Monster, Rockstar, they're cool. Like on X Games and uh-huh. skateboarders, snowboarders, all that. That's, you know, it's the Red Bull X Games or whatever. They're creating a culture. They're creating this whatever. And it's...
I put it up there with vaping at this point. You know, it's
yeah, and the
it's,
old even smoking.
Well, sure.
You know, where you had... I think the women's tennis series, it was the Winston, you know... Tennis.
Oh, that's right.
It's a series for, you know,
about
in the
that.
70s or whatever, and for years, and the car racing, the Winston Cup, and
totally
for
forgot,
years,
yeah.
it, and so we've dropped that one, and now yeah, the vaping kind of a thing, but the energy drinks, and on one hand they're presenting it as athletic, as cool, and usually these aren't overweight people that are out there flipping around on their skateboards or whatever, but if people are doing that on a constant basis. Right. We're back to
cake. And to think about, you know, that so often we're going to grab that energy bar and it's saying, I'm going to have a celebratory piece of cake. And then lunch is the fast food. I'm going to have a celebratory piece of cake. And then somebody brings in donuts or pizza or something, or, you know, actual cake because it's somebody's birthday. And you have that midday celebratory piece of cake. And then evening time comes and it's fish and chips, pizza. I'm going to have a celebratory piece of cake. We've now had five pieces of cake a day. I mean, this is why the stats are what they are here, especially in America. And it's growing. We talk about, you know,
the worldwide influence.
Yeah, because we're influencing everybody else and going towards these. That's the appetite culture. We're back to that again.
Right. And again, the gentle awareness of, oh my gosh, somebody who is stuck in there, mm-hmm. who to say, hey, come out of that culture. It's really, really, really hard.
It is.
And
it is. And you and I talk about what we're talking about with joy and our appetite. That has been years in the making. Yes. That's not how we were raised. And it's been such a slow progression. I even look back to 5 years ago and think, man, I can't believe how some of the things I was doing with my diet that was probably, you know, way better than the norm. But man,
still, it's so point. Everybody's on their journal towards optimaling.
Yes.
And even like we say when we sit out on the deck so often, I am so grateful that I like the broccoli.
I am too.
I find joy in it. And that did take choice.
Yeah.
And that's the concept of extreme ownership. I owned not eating over here and eating over here. And that process took time. And in marriage, and my wife was noting the other, because we were talking to the kids about their picky things, and she is astounded at the way she grew up and said, I can't remember my mom ever making a vegetable that wasn't a can.
Wow.
Just ever. Like that was just not part of the culture.
Yeah.
And so here we are, right? And we're on a journey.
Comes down again to your goals, you know? Where do you want to be?
Your motivation.
Yeah. All right. Well, hope that was
helpful.
Thanks,
yeah.
I hope this episode has you seeing food differently, thinking about it differently, not as mere fuel to burn, but the building blocks for every aspect of your wellness. Thank you, as always, for choosing to tune into this self-helpful podcast. Again, it'd be great to get a rating, review. Best thing, though, is just to know that you've taken what you've heard here and talk about it, discuss it, grapple with it with someone else. I sincerely hope I've helped you help yourself so that you can help others.